Rather surprising, Your Grace. The man can be controlled, Fawn. All we need is a figurehead, a symbol for the nation to rally around. He would not be expected to bear the burden of making the hard decisions. For that, we would provide guidance. It might be difficult to persuade him to return to Linden, sire. He left because he could not stand the thought of his young niece being ahead of him in line for the throne. Inducements can be provided, Fawn. Flattery. If there is a strong call for Lys to return, to lead us in such dire times, how could any man not respond to such a summons? Regan smiled wryly. He should be reminded, also, the Falco Duke added darkly, that these are dangerous times. How many attempts have there been on the life of our crown princess already? Fawn sucked in a breath. The doors and windows were closed. No one was listening to them. Still, he was surprised to hear his duke even broadly hint at such treason. Many, sire. Our crown princess is in great danger at all times. And in great danger as long as her mother holds the regency. To protect our crown princess, Regan could not prevent his lip from curling, we must Although, he shook his head sadly, there is only so much we can do. If Ariana were to suffer a terrible fate, he looked into the fading sun, someone must be ready to lead this nation. Chu Wing stood in the stirrups to stretch her legs, and to relieve the pain in her aching backside. After living in a comfortable cabin on a sailing ship during the journey from Tarador to Qingdao, with a stop in Indus, she was unused to riding a horse. When the message from Lord Salva reached her, she had concluded her official visit to Indus, and had been about to board a ship for the final leg of her journey home. Immediately, her hosts had turned the coach around, and she had raced, day after day, through the landscape of Indus. That time of year, the winds blew strongly in the wrong direction for a sea voyage from Indus to Tarador. A ship would have to slowly beat back and forth all the day to progress a few miles, and on some days all the skill of captain and crew could only hold the ship in place. It was faster to make the long, arduous journey overland. When hills turned into mountains, and roads narrowed, then disappeared, she had left the bouncing coach behind to ride a series of horses. The Indus Empire had a series of stations across the remote mountainous area, where imperial couriers could change horses in their swift race across the sparsely populated wilderness. "Halt!" the captain of her escort shouted in warning, holding up a fist. Wing pulled her horse to a stop, and stood again to peer into the setting sun. They were in a broad mountain valley between two towering mountain ranges, peaks thickly covered in snow and ice, even this far into the springtime. The mountains here were referred to by the Indus as the roof of the world, and Wing could understand why. Even where they were, in a valley, the air was thin and cold. The horses huffed loudly to fill their lungs, even when merely walking. Banners flew atop staffs to the west, almost within the disk of the lowering sun, and Wing squinted to see what lay ahead of them. Even with her wizard-enhanced senses, she could only discern it was a party of people on horses, perhaps a dozen. Banners were carried by two of the horsemen, the cloth flailing in the brisk wind, making it impossible to tell what the banners signified. The captain of her Indus escort drew his sword and shouted commands to his men. The captain's orders, written directly by the Raj himself, were to deliver Madame Chu to Tarador safely, even at the cost of the men's lives. This remote part of the empire, lands only loosely controlled by the Raj, held vicious bandits who preyed upon travellers and merchant caravans. Wing closed her eyes and let her senses fly on before her. Concentrating, she swayed a bit in the saddle. The balance of her body wavered as her consciousness was briefly projected elsewhere. Smiling, she opened her eyes and spoke.
"Captain, you may rest easy. Ahead of us are rangers of Tarador. They have come a great distance to meet us."
Her escort remained on alert, though swords were sheathed. The sun had slid halfway down behind the horizon by the time the rangers arrived. Their leader came on ahead, hands up in peaceful greeting. Seeing the wizard, he dismounted from his horse and got down on one knee, bowing to the powerful wizard from Qingdao.
"Chu Wing, Madame Chu, Her Highness the Regent of Tarador, and the wizard Lord Salva, thank you for answering their call in our time of great need."
"You are?" Wing asked.
"Lieutenant Thames of the Ranger Corps, ma'am. We are here to escort you to Linden. There is a full complement of rangers several leagues back. We could not bring our full strength, due to lack of fodder for our horses in these parts."
He nodded back to his men. Behind the saddle of every horse were bags of grain to feed the horse. The sparse springtime grasses in the high mountain meadows meant the horses would otherwise have to spend most of each day eating rather than travelling.
"Thank you, Lieutenant Thames. Captain Rashesh of Indus will accompany us to Linden," she announced.
Seeing the look of surprise and not a little wariness on Thames' face, she hastened to add,
"The Raj has ordered them to see to my safety. His Imperial Majesty the Raj will be sending an army of 5,000 soldiers to defend Tarador, but they will be arriving by sea, and the winds this time of year are not favorable."
5,000 skilled Imperial soldiers would make a great difference on behalf of Tarador, if they arrived in time.
"The winds?"
He was familiar with the seasonal winds and ocean currents between Tarador and Indus, having served on a Taradoran naval ship early in his career.
"When does the Raj expect his troops to arrive in Tarador?"
"Likely not until the leaves are falling," Wing said sadly.
Thames looked grim.
"I fear to say that may be too late, ma'am. With your strength and skill, and that of Lord Salva, we may yet prevail."
"We may."
Wing looked at the last flash of the day's sunlight.
"It is 2 miles, I believe, to the way station, and it grows dark. Lead on, Mr. Thames. We have a long way to go, and no time to tarry."
Captain Raddick winced as Thorn scraped his face and snagged in his hair. He pushed the rose canes aside slowly, carefully, lest the movement catch the eye of the enemy below. They were in a bad position, for the setting sun to the west illuminated the slope they were on, while looking into the glare made it difficult for Raddick to see his quarry. Against the orders of the regent, and following the hinted desires of Grand General Magrain, Raddick had crossed the border into Asador with only 4 men. Travelling light and swift, they were now on a rock-strewn slope, wrestling with thorn bushes that provided their only concealment. To get into position had taken all day, stealthily crawling up the hill, avoiding poisonous serpents that were sunning themselves on the warm rocks. Only now were they in position to view the enemy, and what Radek saw dismayed him. Campfires. Many campfires, filling the valley below him. Campfires stretching along both sides of the river. Orcs on one side, foul men on the other. Two armies building up strength to invade Tarador. The last light of day fell on a train of wagons coming from the east, bringing more supplies for the enemy's forces. Radek turned his head and looked at his lieutenant, catching sunlight barely glinting off the man's eyes. Soon. The enemy would attack soon. The coming summer could be the last for Tarador. And for the world.
Shomas Feeney was on his own long voyage, although he was able to travel in relative comfort aboard a ship, instead of a bone-jolting ride on horseback. Relative comfort was a relative term. Sleeping in a swaying hammock, trying to walk on a heaving deck, and eating what sailors considered good food had made Shomas yearn for the ship to get into port as quickly as possible. Yet, there he was, back aboard the ship, with sailors climbing the masts to unfurl more sails.
Beginning a voyage as the sun was setting did not seem wise to Shomas, but the sailors explained they must take advantage of the tides, and sailing at night was nothing unusual. The ship was barely making way at the moment, under half sail and still within the main harbour of Le Monde. The main harbour was a fine anchorage, wide, deep enough that heavily laden ships need not fear running aground, shallow enough to securely anchor. Hills ringed the harbour, and a reef offshore protected it from summer storms, that sometimes raged with little warning. It was the safe anchorage of the harbour, and its location in the main shipping lanes off the coast of Tarador, which had made the little Duchy of Le Monde a wealthy and prosperous nation. Despite her title of ancient origin, the Duchess of Le Monde was a queen in all but name. She answered to no one but her subjects. Although that was not quite true, and that was the reason Lord Feeney had made the uncomfortable sea voyage. The Duchess of Le Monde allowed two small offshore islands to be used as bases for pirate ships, pirates supported by Isidor. Not allowed, exactly. The Duchess did not encourage Isidor to use two of her islands, and did not allow ships flying the flag of Isidor to enter the main harbour. She had also done nothing to remove the pirates from the islands. Tarador, in years past, had for centuries maintained a strong naval presence in Le Monde, at the invitation of that duchy's rulers. No more did Tarador protect its smaller neighbour. Ships and troops had been pulled back to the mainland, leaving the duchy to defend itself. And so, the current duchess turned a blind eye to piracy, even to Isidoran ships flying false flags, using her fine harbour. Those ships paid an anchorage fee, and their crews knew to keep their visits ashore brief and quiet. The purpose of Shomas paying a visit to the Duchess was to secretly inquire what support from Tarador she would need in order to act against the pirates. The answer he received, from a chilly and skeptical Duchess, was not encouraging. Unless Tarador could station a substantial force in Le Monde, a half-dozen ships, perhaps 500 soldiers, the Duchess would not do anything to risk an open invasion of her little country by Isidor. As Tarador appeared to be unable or unwilling to protect even itself, the Duchess was not optimistic of a renewed alliance between her duchy and her once powerful neighbour across the sea to the north. The problem, thought Shomas, as he watched the sun settle into the sea to the west, was Tarador's current regent, As long as Carlana Trehaim refused to risk her armed forces in battle, the outcome was inevitable. When he returned to Linden, he needed to discuss a taboo subject with Pedrus. The Wizard Council may need to take action, lest Tarador be defeated before the battle had begun. Corin, or, as he now called himself, Kedron, was also on a ship, though his ship was gliding slowly into a harbour far to the south of Le Monde. That same island had been Corin's first landfall after departing from Tarador. It was the northernmost of the South Islands, and a popular trading port. The harbour held a half-dozen ships at that moment. 2 weeks ago, Corin had counted 14 ships anchored in the warm, clear water. He stood at the rail and looked down. Even in the golden light of sunset, he could see the white, sandy bottom of the harbour. As he watched, a school of multicoloured fish flashed by and under the ship. He inhaled deeply, breathing in the scent of something that was still new to him. New and wonderful and delightful, and so invigorating that every time the scent wafted past his nose, he smiled. It was the scent of what sailors called the tropics, and so indescribably wonderful that Corin could never have imagined it. The scent was a combination of things called pineapples and coconuts and papayas and guava fruits, and sand baked by the midday sun, and of sunlight glinting off crystal clear waters. The balmy evening breeze caressed his bare arms. He had followed the advice of fellow sailors and cut sleeves off one of his shirts as the air grew warmer on their sea voyage south. The tropical breeze also carried from land the dry rustling of palm fronds, so unlike the sound of wind whispering through the pine trees that Corin remembered from his childhood.
"Beautiful, isn't it?"
Alphonse asked, as he came to stand by the rail next to the young man he knew as Kedron. With the ship gliding into harbour on almost bare poles, with all sails furled but one, there was not much for the sailors to do right then. The ship's momentum was carrying it slowly to its selected anchorage. In a few minutes, the captain would call for the sailors to back the single sail, then furl it, and the ship would come to a stop for the night.
"It is," Corin admitted enthusiastically. "Alphonse, when you told me about the South Islands, I didn't believe you. Not all of it. I could never have imagined this."
Alphonse breathed in deeply, filling his lungs with the enticing scent of land, welcome after many days at sea.
"A man could be happy here, Kedron."
Corin nodded silently in agreement. He could be happy here. He was happy here. Aboard the ship, he'd found a home. His fellow sailors were a band of men who knew nothing of his past, knew not that he was a jinx, and did not think him a coward and a deserter. Indeed, his jinx had not arisen since he had been aboard the ship. Nothing bad or even odd had happened. As each day had passed without incident, Corin was beginning to dare hope that he had left his curse behind in Tarador. This, maybe, was where he belonged, far from those he had injured. Far from his curse, far from his home. This place, this tropical paradise, could become his new home, if he embraced it. Then he frowned, a shadow passing across his face. There was a ship between his ship and the land. The shifting breeze had just lofted that ship's flag. Corin could now see it was the flag of Tarador. The last time Corin had been in this port, Rumors had flown that many sailors from his homeland were answering the call to come home. The taverns had been filled with men from Tarador, some of whom had not seen home shores for many years. They were now leaving to take passage north, to serve in their homeland's navy, in their nation's time of dire need. Alphonse saw the look on Corin's face, saw the young man was looking at the flag that fluttered lazily from the stern of the other ship, glowing in the golden light of the setting sun. Alphonse knew what the young man was thinking, and the sailor clasped a calloused hand on Corin's shoulder reassuringly.
"Don't you worry about them, Kedrun. The war between Tarador and Isidore has been raging for 1,000 years, if tales be true. Oh, they will tell you about duty and honor and noble causes, and none of it puts food in your belly or coin in your pocket. I've seen war, Kedrun. I've seen war, and it's all only spoiled kings and queens who have too much and lust for more. They live in their castles, surrounded by every luxury, and all the land they can see belongs to them. And they are not happy, because lands they cannot see do not belong to them. So, they send men like you and me to fight and die."
He spat in the sea. "What do royalty think of their duty to us?"
"Nothing, that's what. I tell you, the troubles up north amount to nothing down here. Tarador has been fighting for 1,000 years. This dust up is nothing new, mark my words. Whatever happened up there, whatever you did, whatever happened to you, put it behind you."
The young man did not appear convinced, so Alphonse continued, looking at the sky, where stars had begun to shine.
"Tell me this, Kedrun. What do they owe you?"
"Nothing,"
Corin said quietly.
"That's right. And that's what you owe them. You're a young man. You need to make your way in the world. Leave strife and glorious quests to others, eh? The South Islands are peaceful. Tell you what, we won't get paid until the day after tomorrow. But I have coins in my pocket. When we get to shore, I'll buy you one of those drinks you like, served in a coconut and all."
"No rum in it, please."
Corin grinned at the thought. Alphonse was right. He had left his homeland to protect the people he cared about from his jinx. He owed nothing more to Tarador. He could be happy here. And he would. If you've enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.